welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everyone, to the Political Cesspool radio program. And I tell you, it's a carnival-like atmosphere here in the studio tonight as we come to you from AM 1380, WLRM radio here in Memphis, Tennessee. I am, of course, your host, James Edwards, joined during the first hour, as is our custom, by Political Cesspool co-host Keith Alexander. We're broadcasting to you tonight on the Liberty News Radio Network to the AM-FM affiliate stations of LNR across the country and also simulcasting online at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, if this was television rather than radio, you would have been able to see what we were doing here all the way up until the very second we went on air. And Keith, why don't you tell our friends in Radio Land what exactly that was?
We're watching LSU, a bungling group of characters, if you've ever seen it, beating Ole Miss, which is an even greater group of bunglers. We're seeing right here in the last few seconds whether
35 seconds left on the game if you're watching on CBS.
But, you know, this is
Keith can't take it. Keith's an Ole Miss alumna. Yeah, he graduated Ole Miss.
Yeah, this is pathetic. You know, I just pull out my tapes from the 1970 Sugar Bowl and watch Archie Manning playing Bill Montgomery and watch all these guys out there that became generals.
I always wanted to do this. I got to do it. 14 seconds left, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to commentate this game here with 14 seconds left. It's number 5 LSU, 43-36 over Keith's alma mater. Doesn't look good here. 3rd and 1, little SEC matchup. Now, Keith, obviously this is trivial. This isn't important compared to our standard fare, but why are we watching this? It's probably a good question.
Yeah, I guess it's just habit because there's no reason. We may as well be watching Grambling State play Jackson State out here because, you know, it is crazy watching this. And these people, yeah, Ole Miss is going to lose this game because a black receiver decided he was going to act like a wild man. And
last touchdown.
Yeah, and he got a 15-yard penalty for diving into the end zone, totally unnecessary, which caused Ole Miss to have to kick off from the 15-yard line rather than the 35. And as a result of that, LSU got the ball at the 50, which in short order they scored. So Ole Miss loses the game because of a numbskull playing football for them. And I'm not going to tell you anything more about this guy, but his name is Marquise Summers. Draw your own conclusions.
Well, that being said, what I was going to say, or what I had intended to say at the top of this show tonight, before we turned on the football game here at WLRM, when the football game's actually still playing, we muted it. We're kind of half doing the show, half watching. 3 seconds left. Let's just see if they can get this touchdown, and then we'll move forward with the show. Last play of the game here. Ole Miss is half Samoan, half Italian quarterback running around. He's still running around. He threw it. It's Hail Mary. Intercepted by LSU. Keith's alma mater falls. Just not the way it used to be when Archie Manning was gunning for the Rebels, was it, Keith?
That's right.
Or should I say the Brown Bears?
Yeah, the Black Bears, excuse me. Yeah, the Ole Miss Brown Black Bears now. And I'm sure it won't be Ole Miss much longer either.
Okay. Yeah, we've got to get on target now. What's so ironic about this? We spend 5 minutes here recapping the end of that game. I'm sorry, Keith. I had to go get Keith a hanky a minute ago after.
I'm not crying at all. This just shows you the futility of.
Well, he does have a hanky in his hand.
Yeah, but I'm going to blow my nose. And
Well, ladies and gentlemen, getting on track now. I got to tell you, it was a record-breaking week for the political cesspool. I want to welcome all of the new readers, all of the new listeners who are undoubtedly tuned in tonight for whatever reason. And there is really no reason at all other than our standard, our standard excellence. But we eclipsed our record for the most unique visitors to our website this week. And an awful lot of those folks were there for the first time. But we hope that it won't be the last. We have had just an incredible number of articles posted to our blog this week at thepoliticalcesspool.org that have been generating a lot of traffic. And with that being said, we're going to be covering more stories tonight than any broadcast we've brought to you all year on the Political Cesspool. We have got no less than a dozen unique stories that we are going to pick apart analyze, provide commentary for. We have no guests tonight. We have got a news desk that is stacked up, and we are going to get to that in just a moment. But while I'm talking to you about the website, I want to tell you that we actually just posted a video that we took a couple of weeks ago that shows the insides of the studio, the very studio that we're sitting at tonight, the studio from which all of the magic originates. And when you listen to this show each week on the Liberty News Radio Network, when you listen to the Political Cesspool, we're coming to you live from right here at AM 1380. And now you'll have a chance to see our digs. A lot of memories have been made in the studio over the years. A lot of headlines have been spawned from the work that we do in this room. And Keith, we're going to give them another good edition tonight.
Always ready. Like we said, the left never disappoints. There's always more than enough to talk about on the political cesspool because the left keeps trying to cram the multicultural agenda down the throats of a reluctant America. And every week we see some new outrage, some new enormity that just can't escape some type of comment on our part.
Well, now that we have gotten through all of the announcements and a victor has been declared in the big LSU Ole Miss showdown. Keith's still shaking his head over there, dreaming about Archie Manning, I tell you. Now somebody's calling in to rub Keith's face in the sand about that. That's not gentlemanly. But, okay, Sears is dreaming of a brown Christmas. This was a story that got quite a bit of attention on our website this week. Well, at least they did say Christmas rather than holiday shopping. And I got to be honest with you guys, I am getting in the mood for Christmas. I love Christmas. It's a great time of year, celebrating the birth of Christ and the faith that our people have had for so many millenniums now. At least two of them, anyway. But other than that, this new Sears ad that is just been launched nationwide, it's just more of the same modern-day corporate media propaganda. As recently as 10 years ago, no major American company would have ever been caught embarrassing themselves publicly with an ad like this. Unfortunately, after you watch it and you get nauseated, Sears insulates itself from meaningful customer relations, so don't expect a complaint to go anywhere. But Keith, this ad, we've actually posted the video to this ad at thepoliticalcesspool.org, so we encourage people to go check it out if they haven't seen it already. What do we find contemptible about it?
Well, it's like the one we ran last week on the Brooks Brothers ad showing this light-skinned black family, mother, father, and child, hawking Brooks Brothers clothing. And Brooks Brothers is probably the stodgiest old line white company that you've ever seen, the home of the three-button sack suit. I doubt if 0.1% of their clientele is black, but like every other element of American society, the elites are just ramming the multicultural agenda down our throat.
Hey, with that, we're going to take a break. I want to give Keith a hug during the commercial and help him get through this Ole Miss. Help him get through this Ole Miss. Listen, we're going to get serious when we come back. Thanks for bearing with us, ladies and gentlemen. It's listen, you got to take the bitter with the better, Keith. We're going to have some fun every now and then, too, on this show. So stay tuned, everybody. We're going to get back to Sears dreaming of a brown Christmas, and we're going to get to a lot more right after this. Stay tuned.
When the truth is found,
welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Keith has sucked it up and embraced another defeat here for the Ole Miss. They're 4-7, so you couldn't have expected much, but going down to Baton Rouge today. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Sears is dreaming of a brown Christmas. This is just a typical ad, I guess, for today's, you know, today's standards of moral depravity. But, you know, we don't complain that white people aren't featured in FUBU ads, you know, for us, by us. But it's not just that, you know, it's fine that anybody be pictured that truly shops at Sears or Brooks Brothers. But there's something a little more insidious about this ad. Keith, the Sears ad, and of course we've got the video to this at our website tonight.
Well, they're really hawking not any products that Sears has to sell, but the multiculturalist agenda. And as you get into the meat of this particular video, you'll see a line of white, blonde girls, teenagers, kissing black boys. One, two, three, I think, in this. And again, of course, that's suggesting that it's all right to date, it's all right to have sex, it's all right to marry. Again, they're doing this because they have an agenda that they're hawking, and they've got an axe to grind with America, and they are, of course, not striking any fire at all with the older generation. But for the younger generation, the young people of America, they think this is reality, even though it's, you know, it is more real than what lies outside the front door. And they are transforming America. It reminds me of what Adolf Hitler said years ago. He said, if the adults do not go with us, it doesn't matter. We've already got the children. And Jewish homosexual pervert Allen Ginsberg, the so-called poet, also said, even more bluntly, we will steal your children. This is part of the effort by the left to steal our children and to transform America into this multiracial melting pot of khaki-colored people, and also to bring about the death of the white race.
And we saw just example number 25 billion. This is also posted to the website of a Swedish tourist who went to South Africa to see the real Africa, and she didn't make it back home alive. And so this is, you know, unfortunately, she found it, you know, very, very right. But, you know, here at the Political Cesspool Radio Program, we value our God-given freedoms of speech and association, and we're not afraid to advocate for them. We're not afraid to use them. We defy cultural Marxism, and we're very open in our opposition to some of the elements that we found to be disturbing that were being pushed in that Sears advertisement that we've been talking about. We'll continue to comment on it. You know, we have ancestors who've died to give us these freedoms, and we're not going to be cowed by political correctness. But, you know, as we always say, those who best understand the strength of a tide in a country are those with the courage to swim against it. And we're proud to be the radio voice for authentic paleoconservatism, and we're going to continue to fight valiantly on your behalf in the court of public opinion. And I think in the end, we're going to win. No retreat, no surrender, no apologies, Keith.
Well, what we're doing, James, is looking through the glass darkly. We look beyond this particular ad. We look beyond all of these particular so-called minor infractions on reality, because we look at what they have in mind and what will happen to America and what will happen to the rest of the world if the left is successful in achieving their dream. If you want to see what the end game is, look to Zimbabwe, look to South Africa, and you'll see white people being killed, stalked at night down to their farms, and hacked up with machetes. This is what happens when the white population is persecuted. And we will indeed be persecuted when we become a minority in our own land. And, of course, the left is always celebrating the fact, Bill Clinton among them, that in the year 2042, whites, if nothing changes in the interim, will be a minority in the United States of America. And when that happens, all of this altruism, all of this equality, all of this respect for minorities will go out the window. And this is what we see what all this is leading to, and quite frankly, it's not a pleasant picture for anybody. Civilization will end, and we will have a world which Thomas Hobbes, the great political philosopher back in the 18th century, described as nasty, brutish, and short.
Well, that's absolutely right. And to get back to the original point that Keith made, and you made it very accurately, the point of the Sears advertisement is the same point as many of these similar ads, not to promote the product. If you watch it, you don't even know what Sears has to offer. You know, a sweater, maybe? I don't know, whatever these black guys were wearing. It's to promote the multiculturalist agenda. And blacks don't shop at Sears, and they don't shop at Brooks Brothers either. They shop at places like here in Memphis, Marty's and Burt's and Greg's.
Sammy's Man of Fashion.
You know, and all these, if you watch these ads when they come on, these are local stores. You know, go to Burt's. I love to see Greg's guys doing it. These are the taglines. And, you know, a Greg's guy is dressed in you know, purple pants and an orange, you know, coat, a top hat, and some red shoes.
if there's a black guy that goes into Brooks Brothers, I'd like to see him. Okay, he's he must be delivering something. On the other hand, it's Sears. If a black guy in Memphis goes to Sears, he's going to shoplift. Where he goes for the type of clothes he wants are these places that James was telling us about, Greg, Sammy's Man of Fashion, etc., ad nauseum. So, obviously, if they're targeting the black community to come to their store, they're trying to target shoplifters to come to their stores, and I don't think they're doing that. The left has an agenda much more important than making money, just like Hollywood does, and their agenda is to transform America. And it's not pro-black, it's not pro-Hispanic, it's not pro-American Indian, it is anti-white. And people need to understand that. You are the enemy in their eyes. And, you know, tolerating this and not speaking out about it just means that you're doing what T.S. Eliot said in his poem, The Hollow Men, this is the way the world will end, not with a bang but a whimper. I would suggest if we're going out, we need to go out with the buying folks, which means we need to fight against this type of propaganda.
Well, Keith, that being said, going to shift gears because, like I said, we can't spend too much time on any one topic tonight because we're going to be bringing more stories to your attention in tonight's show than we have any other broadcast that we've presented to you this year. And I know, Keith, we're going to try if Jesus tarries is coming. Keith, couple of stories that piqued your interest in the communist appeal here in Memphis this week.
Right. We're going back to the original format of the first hour, which we used to call Behind Enemy Lines. And what we did was we debunked and unpacked the local newspaper. You know, the newspapers, just like the TV, just like the movies, has a secret agenda. And they are very interested in providing disinformation, information that is hard for people to figure out. They don't want you to know what's really going on. Well, we had two such stories in the commercial appeal just today. The first one was about the Memphis School Board threatening to revoke or surrender its charter because they were afraid that the white suburbs of Shelby County, were going to become a separate school district under the laws of the state of Tennessee, now that Tennessee has a majority Republican state legislature. And that would prevent the predominantly black Memphis school system, about 90% black, from getting their hands on the white folks' money out in the suburbs. And, of course, that is the great goal of all black politicians, a great conundrum, how to get the white people's money without the white people's votes. And they see now that things are about to happen in such a way that they're not going to be able to reach the white people's money. Of course, they waste money like crazy. The Memphis School Board and the Memphis school system is not there for the benefit of the black children that are attending these schools. It's there primarily for the benefit of black adults who want government jobs. Government jobs exist in the Memphis school system.
We're going to bring it back after this commercial break and let Keith continue where he's leaving off right there. Ladies and gentlemen, it's going to be a red hot show tonight. The website itself, it's on fire. Hundreds and hundreds of comments posted to our articles this week. Be a part of the fun at thepoliticalcesspool.org. I'll be right back.
We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. I want to repeat something that I said right before we went into that last commercial break, and that is a fact. Political Cesspool's website has been on fire this week. You would just be, well, regular listeners of this show wouldn't be, but you would be shocked to know how many people we reach via the radio program itself and our website on any given week. I tell you, we really have a very big, very loyal, and ever-growing audience. And if you go there and read some of the, and if I do say so myself, some of the great articles that we've posted to the website this week, read the comments, 40, 50, 60 comments on some of these stories.
which is, of course, a drop in the bucket to the thousands upon thousands of visitors who have read these stories and did not leave comments. So it's a lot of fun there. We want you to join the party and let your voice be heard on our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But Keith was, I tell you what, he got himself riled up. He was pacing the floor like he's known to do from time to time. So let's see where he goes from here.
What we were talking about was the Commercial Appeal's article on the effort or the threat by the Memphis School Board to surrender its charter rather than lose out on the money from the suburbs, the suburban county school system in Shelby County, Tennessee, where Memphis is located. Now, again, as in many towns or many cities in America, the county is suburban and predominantly white. The city is urban and predominantly black. In fact, I think the city school system now is 90% black. And of course, it is a nadir. It's the, you know, at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to educational attainment. In fact, it's so low that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has given them, I think, something like a couple of $1 billion to try to beef it up. Now, we've talked about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation before. They're the ones that issue the scholarships that are available to everybody except white children. Doesn't have anything, you know, you can be as poor as a church mouse. You can come from a deprived background. If you're white, you're disqualified. This shows you the way that white liberals like Bill and Melinda Gates think. We are at the bottom of the barrel. They'll do anything to prevent whites from attaining their legitimate and merited place in society. If they can't raise blacks up educationally, they're more than happy to drag whites down. Now, what we were talking about before the break was how this is all about money. And blacks, if they are left to their own devices, if they have their own city and they have to use their own tax receipts to finance their own school system, their school system is not going to have nearly as much money as it will have when they have white people. Now, the fact that the Memphis school system has a terrible track record when it comes to standardized test scores and achievements, it's at the bottom of the totem pole in the state of Tennessee. But, of course, that doesn't change the fact that they have more money than just about any other school system in the state of Tennessee. They get it by latching on in a parasite host relationship to the white people and the white people's tax receipts in the county. Now, obviously, there's no reason to spend inordinate amounts of money on the Memphis school system because, quite frankly, you could hardly do worse than the Memphis school system does if you basically had no funding at all. This school system used to be top-notch. This was in the days before Brown versus Board of Education, the 1954 decision that integrated the schools, public schools of America. And if you want a real test, if you want a real eye-opener as to what the effect of school integration has been, compare the SAT and ACT scores at a typical Memphis high school. A lot of them are still around that were around in 1954. Compare the 1954 scores with today's score. And, you know, despite all the fudging, all of the messing around and jimmying the numbers that has happened in the meantime, there's just no comparison. It's like comparing apples and oranges. The predominantly black schools of Memphis today are, you know, they don't hold a candle compared to the learning that was done in the Memphis City schools before at a fraction of the cost. The more money you spend, the worse they get, James.
Keith, while you were in the middle of your commentary just then, Sarah Palin called, and she wanted me to tell you that she thinks you're a Neanderthal.
Well, let me tell you that by her standard, she's probably right. You know, that what James is talking about is an article that we put up on the blog where Sarah Palin is schmoozing around with none less than Geraldine
Ferraro. Wasn't that Dukakis' old running mate? I mean, talk about a dinosaur.
Yeah, really, bringing out the you know, golden oldies of liberalism, and she's up here telling her what a soul sister she is with Geraldine Ferraro. All of these fundamentalist Christians and Tea Partiers that think that Sarah Palin is an authentic conservative need to watch this. She is telling the whole world and putting it on the video and on the audio that she is as liberal as Geraldine Ferraro when it comes to women's rights. She has no respect for the woman's role in the home or any of the traditional, conservative division of labor in the family. And, you know, she's also a big Zionist. So you're going to put this woman in charge. She's the great conservative hope for the presidency. If she is, heaven help us, James.
The only Republican that I would consider voting for, and I mean this, the only Republican, well, besides Curry Todd, I don't think a Tennessee state assemblyman is going to be running for president. Haley Barbour, I might could vote for. But look at what Keith's talking about. What we're talking about here is the fact that Sarah Palin, far from being a traditional conservative who supports traditional family values, is, in my opinion, more closely aligned with feminists. You gotta peel the onion and not take the packaging as it comes to you. She believes that the only reason, and she said this, that this week, as a matter of fact, that women aren't equally represented in CEO offices is because men hate women and have instituted policies to keep them down. She calls this the glass ceiling, a term invented by radical left-wing feminists. She also says anyone who thinks it's best for young children if their mom is at home with them and not spending their day at a factory or office is nothing but a Neanderthal. Now, she said all this to Geraldine Ferraro while she was saying that some of her heroes are Susan B. Anthony, of all people. But let me repeat what I just said before I turn it back over to Keith. She says that if people still believe that it's best for young children, that if their mom is at home with them rather than going out and working, are nothing but Neanderthals. And as Keith said, one of her top advisors is on George Soros's payroll. So come on, folks, open your eyes and quit telling yourself fairy tales. You know, anybody that's packaged as a hardcore conservative but is saying people who respect traditional family values are Neanderthals. Keith, that's not my kind of conservative, that's for sure. But we do have the video of her saying this on our website. Another reason our traffic's been spiking this week. Go check it out for yourself. Sarah Palin thinks you're Neanderthal. ThePoliticalCesspool.org.
Sarah Palin is no conservative. When Bill Kristol and the other Jewish neocons visited her and gave her a clean bill of health, they gave her a clean bill of health because she, like the neocons, is an inauthentic conservative. One, she's totally in the corner of the state of Israel. She is just, you know, she has a Star of David, I understand, behind her desk when she was the governor of Alaska. She would get us into more and more wars, just like Bill Kristol and Jonah Goldberg and people of that ilk want us to get into, all of these so-called conservatives. You know, the neoconservative is basically, on domestic issues, indistinguishable from a liberal, and in foreign policy, they just want to spread democracy and engage us in wars that just happen to be in the general vicinity of the world where the state of Israel is located. Now, she is apparently has more in common with Bella Abzug and Gloria Steinem than she does with any conservative woman like Phyllis Schlafly. Now, Sarah Palin, like Gloria Steinem, apparently thinks that a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And, and you know, if this is, you know, please don't waste your vote voting for somebody like this. You know, this is, you know, the more you stir it, the more it stinks with Sarah Palin.
And you got to read the text of her just sucking up to Geraldine Ferraro as if she's some sort of hero. She's talking about how Geraldine was grossly attacked back in 1984. I mean, my God, what about real heroes of the right? People like me and Keith and Pat Buchanan and so many of the other people who have come on this show. What about the attacks we have to be subjected to? I mean, Geraldine ain't got nothing on us. And so she's saying how she remembers watching Geraldine Ferraro when she was in college, she being Palin, and how she was standing on the shoulders of Susan B. Anthony. What an inspiration she was. And that there are Neanderthals out there who pick on the petty little superficial things like women staying at home and raising the children rather than going out and having a career. I mean, come on, folks. Who are you going to believe? Me or your lying eyes? Go watch the video. Keith, we got to take a break.
Let me just say this. You see how well Sarah Palin's family has turned out with her daughter, Bristol. You know, enough said.
Got to take a break. Test or racist? We're going to tell you why when we come back.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang, call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, it's starting to get hot here in the studios of WLRM AM 1380, our flagship station here in Memphis, Tennessee, where we're broadcasting around the world via the internet and across the country, coast to coast, courtesy of the AM/FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. Now, we've covered a lot of ground. We're starting to shift into high gear here. Covered a lot of ground, but still much more ground to be covered. I tell you, this second hour is going to blow you away. Blow you away in the second hour. We've got so many stories, it's going to be hard to pack them all in this show, but we're going to do the best we can with the time we've got. Now, we just finished telling you why Sarah Palin thinks traditional conservatives are Neanderthals. Check that out at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And don't forget to read this one as well. I wrote a whole book about what's racist and what's not, and what passes as racist and racism in modern day politics, political vernacular. Tests are now racist. Tests. So when you go into school, you take your science test or your math test, you are taking something that is an instrument of racism. And here's what's going on. Proficiency of black students is found to be far lower than expected, according to the New York Times. To that I said, well, my God, I thought we were all equal. Then it must be that the tests that they're given are racist. And that day is coming eventually. But until the day when liberals have the courage to ban all tests in the United States of equality, schools will just have to take it upon themselves to eliminate tests one by one. After all, what are schools for? Thankfully, more and more schools are starting to do the right thing and getting rid of these hateful, racist tests. So before I turn it over to Keith, let's recap. New York Times, among other newspapers of record, have pointed out what we all have known for, eons. The proficiency, the IQ levels of black students aren't as high as whites for whatever reason. The new reason is the tests are racist. But now, thankfully, we found some schools, courtesy of Yahoo News. Failure is now impossible for high school students. No, really. What would a school been like if you didn't have to worry about getting an F? Well, students at West Potomac High School in Alexandria, Virginia, are about to find out, the Washington Post reports, the Washington Compost reports. Earlier this year, the school all but eradicated the standard mark for failure. Instead of giving wayward students an F, they just give them an I, standing for incomplete. That way, it gives them time to redeem themselves. Students with an I on their report card can literally learn their lesson and catch up over the year, at which point they'll be given a grade for their mastery of the material just like any other student. So, basically, Keith, and this school in suburban D.C. is not the only one to do it. This is a growing, disturbing trend. No more Fs for black students. Just pass them through.
You know, the New York Times is not just another generic paper in America. It is the flagship of liberalism, and it is owned by a Jewish family, the Sulzberger family. So when they tell you that black proficiency is even lower than anyone feared, that's something to take seriously. This tells you that the liberal propaganda about the equality of the races is just that. It's just propaganda. It's lies. And they feel, in Orwellian fashion, that if they tell the big lie often enough, it becomes the new truth. In the city of Memphis, we now have, at least in the elementary school grades, the same type of regime that is described here in this suburban Washington, D.C. high school. They don't give Fs. They give incompletes and keep passing these kids through because they don't want to damage their self-esteem. Of course, as Courtney of Alabama, one of our typical bloggers or commenters, has said oftentimes, or has said before, I remember reading this from her, there is no need to fear about the self-esteem of black children. They seem to have the highest self-esteem of anyone. the fact that we need to be concerned about is that there is no basis or less basis for their self-esteem than the self-esteem of almost any other group. Now, this is, you know, this ignores reality, the idea that somehow blacks have to achieve at the same level of whites, of Asians, of Hispanics, or any other group, or else there's some, you know, pernicious honky plot afoot that is preventing them from doing this. Obviously, these people either haven't read or have blithely ignored the message of the book called The Bell Curve. In The Bell Curve, the big revelation was that human intelligence for any racial group is spread over a bell curve type distribution. You find the median IQ, which for American blacks, African Americans as we call them, 85, American whites, 100, and then you have a bell curve distribution, which means up at the top, around 85 on either side, you go flat or almost flat for a while, and then you fall off a cliff and go out into a flange. Well, 15 points, which is the difference between the average white and black IQ, is one standard deviation point, which means that only 16% of blacks with this type of bell curve distribution have an IQ equal to or greater than the average white person. And furthermore, only 16% of whites have an IQ equal to or less than the average black. So consequently, the great hunt, you know, we talk about the, there's a book, I think it's called The Hunt for Red October. The hunt for black CEOs, a hunt for blacks to go to Harvard and Yale is, you know, would be an even more daunting task than the hunt for Red October. They keep doing it, and they only do it by accepting blacks at lower standards. And, of course, this harms white kids, particularly white kids that are trying to move up the social ladder in society. These are the people that don't have connections, that are relying on there being a fair, objective basis for determining who gets the goodies in society, and white kids are increasingly left out because of affirmative action. And this tells you that without affirmative action, there would be no blacks achieving these positions of authority and power in America.
Come on, folks, get with the program. What other radio show in the world are you going to hear this kind of no-holds-barred, truthful commentary? The facts may hurt, but the spade is a spade,
as Curry. As Granddad said, we're not afraid to call a spade a dirty shovel here at the Political Cesspool.
And listen, we need your support. If you appreciate the program that we bring to you, remember that we are a listener-supported entity. We ask that you consider supporting us financially by going to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. But getting back to and tell your friends about this show. You know, it's so unique. It's so refreshing if you are a European-American paleoconservative. We're the only game in town, and we're doing it in a very mainstream way. We get more press than just about anybody, and deservedly so, because we talk about issues like this clarity and candor.
It's like the emperor's new clothes. And, for example, we were talking earlier about all the expenditures of the Memphis school system. Well, you can see with this type of bell curve distribution and this documented differential between the average IQs of blacks and whites, all this money is just being poured down a rat hole. It's not going to make a bit of good. You, as Grandma used to say, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
And getting back to the story here that we opened up the segment with, schools are now beginning to adopt a policy where they would no longer issue Fs or failing grades to students who can't cut the mustard. They're giving them I's, incompletes, and just passing them through. So the Washington Compost goes on to ask, is this an inspired move to get those marginal students on track about learning? Or is it just another way in which we're coddling underachieving kids and hobbling the rest? Parents, educators, and students are divided. Mary Mathewson, it's encouraging, Keith, to find a teacher who has some sense here. Mary Mathewson, an English teacher at Potomac High.
She's unemployed now.
Keith thinks he's unemployed now, tells the Washington Compost that the new standard not only cripples teachers,
It, quote, takes away one of the very few tools that we have to get kids to learn and gives them an out, resulting in a system that kids are under the impression that they can do whatever they want and failure is not a big deal. And I'm surprised that the newspaper reporter interviewing Miss Matheson could understand her. Well, I understand what she was saying through her clanhood with an answer like that, Keith. How dare that? That's something right out of the Ku Klux Klan that we not have standards for excellence, and we have A's, B's, C's, D's, and F's. That's got, you know, Hitler written all over it by modern day standards.
Well, that's when you look behind the read between the lines. But this is typical disinformation by the New York Times. What they're trying to do is to sugarcoat the fact that there is a differential that cannot be tested away, cannot be taught away, cannot be made to disappear. Race is important.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm shaking the hand once again of Keith Alexander. He's wiping the sweat from his brow. He's gone another 12 rounds this first hour and done a mighty dead gum good job. So Keith is going to... he's a little bit older than me. Doesn't have the stamina that the young buck has. He's got to call it a night. I still got 2 hours left, and this second hour coming up is going to be big. If you like the stories presented to you this first hour, we got a lot more of them just like it coming up in the second. So stay tuned, and I'll be back in a minute.
In the First Self-Righteous Church, in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. We're jumping pews and shouting hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit of the blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.